You're listening to Irish Radio Canada Home and Abroad, and I'm delighted to have the opportunity to catch up with the Irish Ambassador to Canada, John Kennan. And it's been, it's over a year since we had an opportunity to talk. It was just after John arrived and after he had literally only got his feet wet, but not enough to kind of get up to his waist in the country, which he has since done. He's been up to his neck in it, literally. Ambassador, thank you so much for taking the time. And it has been a bit of time. So what I want to do is to kind of drop the ball out there and say, since you've got here, you've been coast to coast. There's been so many ministerial visits. There's been so much global political upheaval. There's been changes in Canada. This isn't the place you thought you were coming to.
Well, first of all, Austin, huge thank you for inviting me on the show, and congratulations on the show and the success it's been for so many years. It's a fantastic resource for everybody to have, so delighted to be here today. Yeah, it's been an incredible start. We came over here in September of 2024, so it'll be 2 years this September, and it's altogether it's a four-year posting, so it's nearly halfway through. But it's been a really remarkable period, I suppose, looking at it on so many different lenses. But first of all, when we started here, Justin Trudeau was the Prime Minister. Pierre Poilievre, who also has Irish heritage, was riding high in the polls. And the assumption of the systems around was that it would likely be a Conservative government. And then things started to change. I suppose one of the big, from a Canadian point of view, with the President Trump administration, and the whole discussion around some of the assertions of the 51st state and Governor Trudeau and so on, and all of that, tariffs and all in the round, I suppose, there was Canada that reacted to that, and ultimately Prime Minister Trudeau left office, and the leadership contest entered Mark Carney, great Irish Canadian, and he had a stunning success in the Liberal Party election, as everybody knows, and then went on to be the Prime Minister of Canada. So from really the Liberal Party saying, well, we're not going to be back in power for a long time, are now back in power. So that's one big change, and that the dynamic there. But then looking at the politics of it all, and what the Prime Minister Carney has done in terms of driving the country, really focusing on diversifying its trade, and that brings into play the question of, well, where do you diversify to? So if Europe is a key focus for the Prime Minister, so for Ireland that's been really significant, because we talk about being the a primary gateway for Canada into Europe, because we're English speaking, because we're a common law, very stable political country, political environment, and we've got very pro-business policies in our government. So we're home to about 100 large-scale Canadian companies at the moment for their European basis, that like OpenText, Shopify, Kinaxis, Geotab, BMO Bank of Montreal, and others. But the pipeline of companies now looking to Ireland as a base is very, very significant. We have a very healthy pipeline. But that, I suppose, agenda is something that we've focused on a lot here since I came in, is about the economic agenda. Looking at that in particular, what was struck me was that the history and heritage of Ireland in Canada is well regarded and generally well known. What hadn't been as well known is Ireland as a place to do business with. And so we didn't want to change that. We just wanted to broaden out the conversation on Ireland. And building on the good work of my predecessors for many years who'd done good work. But the decision was to really try and get some new data on the table. So we commissioned the Conference Board of Canada, and I have one here for you, Austin, to read the Conference Board of Canada, to give us a study. And the study was, what's the economic impact of Ireland in Canada and the economic impact of Canada in Ireland? And the numbers were very, very strong. So what it showed is that Irish company, Ireland is now the 10th biggest investor in Canada. So that's news to people. We support 32,000 jobs across Canada. And our trading relationship between Ireland and Canada is about $14 billion a year. And we've identified about $3 billion of additional trade we could deliver. In addition to that, Ireland is a very significant source of investment for Canada. As I mentioned, the top 100 large-scale companies. It's the 7th biggest destination for services investment, and all of the main banks and technology companies are now based in Ireland. So when you look at it in that prism, and we had that report, very serious data model that we created, we then had the opportunity to have events in Ottawa, Toronto, Vancouver, Edmonton, Calgary, Quebec. We translated into French, Montreal, and in those events, and you know, meeting the likes of Premier Danielle Smith out in Alberta, or the different business associations, investment groups, and it just gave us the opportunity to really talk about Ireland as a destination for investment. So that's been a huge part of our work, and it plays into that wider issue of diversification. The second area that we've put a lot of energy on is cultural diplomacy, and I know you're a huge cultural ambassador in many, many hats, including one of the founders of the Rose of Tralee here in Canada, and all, and of course the radio show as well. But we, when you looked at it and said, well, relatively speaking, Ireland, Canada is relatively underinvested in culture, in the amount of money we're investing in it compared to some of the other countries. So we looked to see, well, what kind of thing could we do? And then we brought over various people from the National Library, the National Gallery, the National Museum, and also Culture Ireland. And they met with their counterparts in Canada, and everybody pretty much said the same thing, that Canada, the relationships aren't as developed as there are other countries between Ireland and Canada, but there's a huge affinity, huge shared values, and this idea of us collaborating together on things was a real opportunity. So then we said, well, maybe we could create a season of that we could promote a season of Irish culture, what could it be, and how would we do that? And then the idea emerged, which was that 1847, huge year in Irish history, very sadly, hundreds of thousands of Irish had to become refugees to leave the country, famine refugees. An enormous number came to Canada. And then what we saw is just the enormous generosity of the Canadian people when we came in, and into Grosse Ile first, and then on to Montreal, and through into Toronto and other places. But to use it, I often talk about Montreal as an example. If you look at the city of Montreal in, summer of 1847, there was 50,000 people lived there, and in the 10 weeks from the end of June to early September, about 75,000 Irish refugees pour into the city, completely overwhelm the city, emergency services, educated, the doctors, the health, really a huge sort of burden. But the response from the people of Montreal was incredible. By and large, regular people opened their homes and took people in and looked after them and got them going again. So when we were in discussions about this with the Prime Minister, the discussion was, look, 1847, a huge year for Ireland, a tragic year, really. But it was also a big year for Canada, because Canada showed the world what's possible in terms of humanity, kindness, generosity, the power of the human spirit. So it really demonstrated, and it was our forefathers and our people who received that kindness. And then, so
don't go too far into that, because I want to keep that for later on when we start tagging where we're going.
Okay.
Because that's let's stay with the past at the moment. Because when you talked in terms of trade, I remember when CETA was initially proposed and it went over, and it has taken quite a while for it to be ratified.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, I think in the last short period it has been ratified.
Well, it hasn't actually been finally ratified. The situation, you're right, it has been. So the CETA was provisionally ratified in 2017.
Yeah.
And our trade has doubled since that. So it just shows you the benefit. It's an incredible success story. The CETA was challenged in the previous number of years ago, and it went all the way to the Supreme Court. And the ruling was that the government had to create a new piece of legislation around the Arbitration Act, in other words, how disputes would be settled in order to sign CETA. So where we are now is that legislation is complete, it's done, it's gone through the Parliament, the Dáil, and into the Senate, and and then it has been passed, and the President has signed it, and signed the legislation as well. It has just very recently been challenged in the courts, and that court, the Arbitration Act now, not CETA, but the Arbitration Act will be, that challenge will be heard in the autumn time,
okay.
And we'll then have a sense of whether it stands or not, and then it'll progress. The actual matter of signing CETA is quite straightforward, then it's a government decision. But I think the Taoiseach came and met Prime Minister Carney in September of last year and made a big commitment to drive it through. So politically they've done everything they can do, which is create the Arbitration Act. Now the courts have to decide about a challenge, but so it's been a big delivery from the Taoiseach, big delivery from the government. And what we're going to do as part of our European presidency, one of the things is to mark 10 years of CETA, and there'll be events around that,
right,
in October.
The other thing you mentioned was culture and the long-term relationship, because I guess we live north of Big Brother, and the relationship between Ireland and Canada was always overshadowed. And I think some of that over the last 12 to 18 months has been, I won't quite say redressed, but more of light has been shed on the strength of that relationship.
Yeah.
And that even going back to the Peter Robinson relationship in 1823, 1825. Last year was a big year on that and highlighted that relationship, particularly down around Peterborough.
That's right, that's right, that's huge. No, I mean, it's incredible. One of the things that strikes me since I came into the job here in, as ambassador in Canada is just the amount of connection with Ireland, with Canada, is remarkable. I mean, I read about it, I could see the stats and the pieces of paper, but to actually be the ambassador today and day out, meet people who are first generation, second, third, fourth generation Irish heritage, and all everyday people are talking to them and they're telling me their story, their family story. A great example of that was last weekend. We went to Stampede in Calgary to kick off our European Union presidency, and 11 ambassadors travelled with us from across the European Union. It was a huge statement for Canada, for Ireland, to have this. And it was very well received. We met the Premier Smith, we met the Premier Ford, we met a whole ton of people, business people and everything else. But the story I was telling was that if you bring that back, and Stampede is such a positive, huge event and business and everything that's done at it, but in 1847, Thomas and Bridget O'Byrne were two of those famine refugees we talked about. They left Westport, desperate really, to come. They came eventually to Toronto, got to Canada and Toronto, but eight children. Two of the children went to Saskatchewan and one to then on to Calgary, at which point their name had gone from O'Byrne to Burns. So Patrick Burns went to Calgary, set up a ranch. By 1912, it was the fourth biggest company in Canada, Burns Meats. And then, as it's a matter of record, because it's in the Museum of the Calgary Stampede, himself and I think it was three or four friends, decided to fund the first Calgary Stampede. So they got it going. So without that terrible tragedy of the famine, then the Stampede wouldn't have happened. So these things are kind of one knockoff from the other. But the awareness of Ireland here is huge. And what we're doing is just shining another dimension on the Irish story, which is very much on the business story. So when the Prime Minister came to Ireland and you mentioned we'd all the ministerial visits, so I suppose the highlight for us really has been the Prime Minister's visit to Ireland, where he came. There's just a little booklet we have with him, you know, the visit itself was in a number of parts. So it started out on the Saturday morning. The Taoiseach and Prime Minister met, and they discussed eight areas of collaboration under a new Canada-Ireland partnership in terms of research, innovation, security and defence, food supply, energy, all their whole relation around medical, pharma, medtech. So really significant areas of cooperation. And then we went on into a lecture that the Prime Minister delivered, the first de Chastelain lecture, talked a lot about the role of middle powers collaborating and working together. And then we had a state dinner that night, and then the next day we went down to Ahagower, which is in Mayo, as you know, Austin, and we went to Mass with the Prime Minister and his wife Diana. And then, you know, beside the Mass's graveyard where his family is buried, and it's deeply personal for the Prime Minister. And then there was a fabulous civic reception in Mayo. But at the core of it was this very detailed discussion they had about, okay, how can our two countries work together more? The Prime Minister has since asked me to meet him, so I met him last Monday in his office to go through a detailed line by line area of all these areas of collaboration. So he's a very impressive guy, and I think what we're seeing is our own agenda is very, very much about building an economic engagement based on the shared values and deep heritage and culture. And so while our report I just referred to has us as the 10th biggest investor in Canada, the latest Canadian statistics just published this year has Ireland actually as the 8th biggest investor in Canada, which is really remarkable to think where we came from.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, so in the European Union context, we're the 4th biggest. So I think it's France, Germany, the Netherlands, Ireland, and then Italy is 5th. So Ireland to be in that top tier of European investors, overall the 8th biggest investor, it really is, it's given people pause for thought. It's really, really positive.
Go back to culture and again, while we're talking about hitting above our weight in business, in culture, you look at particularly James Joyce.
Yeah.
And that has become a phenomenon around the world. 10 years ago, it would have been under the radar. It's, for some reason, there's been huge work done, and it's getting traction.
In terms of the...
of awareness of Joyce on a global level,
yeah.
And the Irish community abroad, the Canadian Irish community,
yeah.
Buying into.
That really has been, and I think here in Ottawa, a great example is the Joyce Society, that they do great stuff. I was at one of their performances, The Dead, last year, and in fact, when we had the centenary of Ulysses, which I think was 2024, we had a huge, huge uptick in activity across the world. All our embassies doing things like Bloomsday parties and all of that. And so it's been great really focusing on that literature. What we decided to do over the last year is to not just focus on Ulysses, but Bloomsday is that date in the middle of June. But we decided to use the focus of Ulysses and Joyce on Bloomsday to shine a light on some contemporary writers. So what we did was sent a modern Irish fiction writer, let's say Maggie O'Farrell or Sally Rooney or whoever the various people were, and Colm Tobin, and we sent out books to every of all the parliamentarians and all the ministers and everybody and premiers to say, look, you know, you have a very busy time, but to celebrate Bloomsday and James Joyce this year, we're sending you here this, you know, you're very busy, but you need to break some time, and here's a book we're sending you from of modern Irish fiction. And it's been a great response. And then we had also at one of the bookshops downtown, we had a promotion where if you bought an Irish book, The embassy would buy a second one for you,
right.
And that was great too. So it's been really good, and it underlines our literary heritage, which is so strong, of course.
You mentioned you were at the Stampede with all the other European ambassadors.
Mm-hmm.
There must be a huge amount of envy that they wish they could be the Irish ambassador.
Well, I think everyone's proud to represent their own country.
I know, but you know that you certainly have the Europe there because Prime Minister Carney is boasting his Irish heritage and he's visited Ireland, and we're certainly would be the ones that I could see others being envious of.
Well, I can tell you it has been a remarkable experience to work so closely with the Prime Minister. As you know, Austin, because you've been here with us at some of the events, but on St. Patrick's Day,
we were away.
I remember it now.
Yeah, we were away for that, unfortunately.
That one, but it was a hugely significant event.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's another example of a Prime Minister attending a National Day ceremony, but it certainly was. Certainly people were surprised, no more than myself, when I got the confirmation that he'd come. But he told a hugely interesting story that night, the reception. He talked about his own life, his own the sense of identity, and he said, you know, he had some really big jobs in his career. We know those, the Bank of England governor, the Bank of Canada governor, and all the stuff he's done. But he said, you know, one of the jobs he did, the Bank of England governor, he said the office he was in was really designed to project power and prestige in a big, big, imposing office. So he said, how do I make this my own? And help me a little bit and reflect my personality. So he said, okay, I got it. I decided to take a picture of the parish of Ahagower and just put it above the door. That's where his grandparents left 100 years ago with £5 in their pocket to come to Canada. The parish of Ahagower, and the idea was that he said, I did that because he said, no matter who walked in that door, and you'd have presidents and prime ministers and billionaires and everybody else coming in to talk to, of course, everyone's talking to the governor of the Bank of England. And he said, I'd look up at that picture and I'd remember who I am and where I'm from. And it was a very deep moment for him, a profound moment. And he could see he welled up as well. And the room really responded. The emotion was so charged in the room. So he's very attached to his Irish heritage. But it's interesting because, you know, he is a very, very, very proud Canadian.
Mm-hmm.
There's just no doubt about that. He's hugely proud about this country and very humble as well. But he's not just a Canadian, he's an Irish Canadian.
Mm-hmm.
And he identifies with that. And the two things can exist perfectly well together.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, no, I mean, coming to... That was a wonderful experience that he was here that day and we had a great chat. A number of weeks later, we had 150 CEOs from... Enterprise Art, Ernest & Young Entrepreneur of the Year. Either the people that have won or have been the finalists. So very, not just CEOs, but they've been very accomplished and they've won this award. So yes, they were here, and the Prime Minister very kindly agreed to come and have a meeting with them and to talk. And he was very forthright about, you know, the need to take decisions now because of the world is in a state of rupture, as he described it. So that was wonderful. And then, you know, just now to have had the visit to Ireland, which has been really a remarkable success, has been just fantastic. And and then, as I said just there a minute ago, I went into his office in about 2 weeks ago to just go through the action, last week actually, to go through the action plan on what we've agreed.
Ambassador, you mentioned the rupture. That's how that rupture has changed everybody's role, has changed everybody's life. It must have had an impact on your role, your life, and on so many different levels, because you as a conduit back to Dublin as well, and coping with, dealing with, handling diplomatically.
Yeah, I mean, it's changed every, like, so there has been a huge, it's in the world of geopolitics now, there is, it is a moment where there is a huge amount happening. I mean, you have a situation in the American administration where, as you know, they're pursuing a agenda of tariffs on the trade, and then there's a lot of challenges in the you know, with the conflict in Ukraine, the conflict in the Middle East. All of that's having a massive impact on energy prices, which is, everybody needs energy, or businesses need energy, so that drives the price of things up, inflation up, supply chains are disrupted. And then in the Canadian, specifically here in Canada, you know, the reliance of the United States is enormous. I mean, 70% of the business. So any business person would say, well, if 70% of my customers is one place, that's a really important customer. So it's a deeply important customer for the United States, for Canada. It's also very big family links and business links and culture links. So I think this has been a real moment for Canada. And as being a guest in the country here, it's been remarkable. To my job, is part of the job, of course, is to observe what's going on and interpret it for Ireland and advise the government of Ireland about it. And there's been a lot of interest in Ireland about Canada as well. So to see a country which is really kind of finding its space, who is Canada? What does Canada stand for? And what you're seeing, I think, emerging under the leadership of Prime Minister Carney is a very strong values-based leadership, that Canada stands for democracy, rule of law, multilateral institutions, it's a trading nation, it's a proud nation. And I think where there was a defining moment, if you had to pick one, within this for Canada was Davos, where the Prime Minister delivered this remarkable speech that people have talked to me about all over Ireland, all over Canada. It has cut through like nothing else. And he gave people reason to think, okay, maybe we have another way of doing this. And this concept of middle powers working together, Ireland is, in this definition, a middle power. So the visit of the Prime Minister was directly related to that, to Ireland, whereby we have these 8 areas of collaboration we're working on now. And that's an example of us collaborating as middle powers. So you're seeing that reaction, you're seeing the leadership response in Canada. But all this to say, that Canada has now emerged, I think it's fair to say, as one of the most consequential countries on the world stage. And you're seeing it, other ambassadors, myself included, are all very keen, but our capitals, Dublin in my case, or the different ambassadors who we work with, would say that people want to hear what's the view of Canada on this, on that, on X and Y and Z. So it's interesting to see that, hugely challenging. And I know that the trade agreement is really at that sensitive point for Canada right now. But it is equally fascinating and interesting and inspiring to see the way the leadership of the Prime Minister and how the country is really pulled together. I think there's a real sense of identity here now, which is remarkable to see.
When you go home, do you sense that the Irish in Ireland get it? And by that I mean, because I will say, when I was in Ireland, I got a sense that because there's that much water between North America and Ireland, that a lot of people in Ireland don't get how the situation has evolved and are somewhat ambivalent.
Well, it's interesting. I suppose... you know, even growing up myself, I think, you know, we were, a lot of people, when you're thinking of North America, you kind of think Canada, United States. Not hugely differentiating between the two of them. Ireland, of course, has deep, 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 deep connections with the United States as well. And I mean, we have so much family there, we have so much business there, we have so much culture links. And to some extent, I suppose maybe you could say that Canada has been maybe a little bit overshadowed by that over the years. But what's happened since our time here is the different spheres that we operate in, so politically, our business, culturally, our diaspora linkages, is people are now saying, oh, Canada, yeah, okay, I know we've, because it's about shared values, we stand for the same things, so that's really important. That's not every country, but for Ireland and Canada, yes, that is the case. And let's start exploring that. So you mentioned at the top of the interview, we've had a remarkable amount of political visits. Like even just say in the last year, Austin, this since September of last year, we say this season, which we're now coming to the end of, we've had the privilege of hosting the Taoiseach here. Only the fourth time ever a Taoiseach to visit Ottawa in the history of the Irish state. So very significant meeting with the Prime Minister. From that, they agreed to do the Canada-Ireland 180. They agreed to partner on the business side and a whole host of other things. Then the Taoiseach then, following that, we had the Prime Minister Burke, the Minister of Enterprise, Trade and Employment, came with a big delegation of 30 companies with IDA and Enterprise Ireland, did a big tour between Toronto and Ottawa. Very serious investment. One of the companies we met there was OpenText, the biggest technology company in Canada, founded by an Irish-Canadian, Tom Jenkins, and had very positive discussions, which actually, just to jump forward, in the Prime Minister Carney's visit, OpenText announced the most significant technology investment in the history of the Irish-Canada relationships. 500 jobs, AI engineering jobs, top-quality jobs in Cork and Galway. I think it's over $200 million investment. It's really significant. So that was all on that visit in November. In January, then, the Minister of Culture, Patrick O'Donovan, came out with a creative industries trade mission with 10 companies that we invited on the screen sector. And then together with Minister Miller, were you away in January? Yeah. With Minister Miller, the Canadian Minister of Culture and Identity, they launched the details of the Canada-Ireland 180 initiative. We'll come back to that in a minute. But then you're looking into St. Patrick's Day. Cabinet Minister Dara Cleary came here, 3-city tour, Ottawa, Montreal and Toronto. And of course, in Ottawa, we had that famous, that really special reception with the Prime Minister, which was just remarkable. And then we had Minister Timmy Dooley in Western Canada. Then we had a big, big period of planning for the Taoiseach's trade mission, which was due to be Taoiseach, 5 ministers and 6 state agency CEOs. That was a huge undertaking. And really at the last minute, that didn't go ahead because of the whole issue around the fuel protest at that time, which is unfortunate, but it was the right call, of course. Following on from that, with Minister Richmond, you were here with us just a short number of weeks ago, around the launching our diaspora strategy and here in the House in Ottawa, and then in Montreal we launched our sports diplomacy strategy, and then the next thing was the Prime Minister to come to Ireland. So and then looking at that, just on the topic of ministerial and political engagement, next week James Maloney, who's the chairman of the Irish Canada Interparliamentary Group, as you know, he's also chairman of the Ireland of the Canada Europe Interparliamentary Group, and in that context he is bringing a delegation of 6 parliamentarians to Ireland as part of our European presidency. And having meetings, I will join them. We're going to go to Valentia Island to the cable conversation, the cable, which is the Newfoundland first ever cable, the start of the internet, as they say. And then a very important event is going to happen then on the following weekend, which is Minister of Culture and Identity Mark Miller is going to visit, which is the first time we have a culture minister from Canada coming. And then he's bringing a very, very serious delegation of, I don't know exactly how many, but I think it's 10 plus CEOs of the Crown Corporations to meet their opposite numbers on the library and the gallery and the museums and the concert hall. And we're going to sign a memorandum of understanding between the two countries on cultural engagement. And so it's really incredible. In the last week, I've had conversations with 2 senior cabinet ministers here in Canada about coming to Ireland in the autumn time. So I think the political engagement is absolutely focused and tuned in now, and you can see that momentum is there. It's interesting, in our report that we published last year, which is referred to, and I talked about it, just Ireland is Canada's 10th biggest investor. The latest information just published by Global Affairs Canada has just shown Ireland has now moved from the 10th biggest investor to the 8th biggest investor, the 4th biggest of the European Union. which is huge to think. I mean, and I always remind ourselves, and I always use the opportunity when I have making speeches as much as I can to say, you know, it is great that we are doing so well, but when we were on our knees, when we were really stuck, Canada was there for us, and we'll never forget that. And it's important to have that sense of humility and remembering where we are and where we're from. And you know, so, and that's where the Canada Ireland 180 project is going to be so, so exciting.
Good opportunity to take a short break and then talk about Canada Ireland 180. So as I know where that is. Are you going to Waterford for the football?
I would dearly love to, but I don't think we're going to be able to make it. I was going to go, my plan was to bring them down on Wednesday, so I'm flying over on Tuesday. We're meeting Derek Cleary, we're meeting a whole ton of different people. But unfortunately, no, they're not going to be there on the Wednesday, so I'm going to just be...
And you know Deirdre Maloney's parents are Dungarvan.
I didn't.
Yeah, or that's where she's from. And the Ottawa team are just have now been twinned with Colligan, which is outside Dungarvan, which was where we were all...
I was just talking with the GA this morning, because we're bringing Mark Miller to the All-Ireland Final. To the Galway, Limerick.
All right. Well, this is, they're twinned with Colligan, which is outside Dungarvan, which is where we were for COVID.
Oh, isn't that gas?
So I've just sent a note to some of my buddies with that kind so that they hopefully can get to that game.
Oh, that's brilliant.
And on Valencia, there was a couple that lived here in Ottawa, Brian and Jackie Morgan, and they bought the house and set up a bed and breakfast in the house in Valencia Island.
Oh.
No longer there. Brian died and Jackie, I think, has moved back to Dublin, but they had moved back and they were doing organic farming and stuff and serving it in the bed and breakfast. We stayed there one night, and Peter McKay, the former Conservative, his uncle was the minister in the Protestant church on Valencia Island, and he got married there, I think.
Amazing.
Yeah, so she does,
it's incredible really when you think about it, isn't it?
Yeah. He also honeymooned in, there's a lighthouse down, it's not down in Kinsale or somewhere where you can rent it, and he honeymooned down there, I think, in the lighthouse. So,
wow,
there's lots of little, those kind of little stories. No, you're listening to Irish Radio Canada at Home and Abroad, and we're here's to Irish Radio Canada at Home and Abroad, and we're chatting with Ambassador Kilcannon. Ambassador, you mentioned the Canada Ireland 180, and that's looking to the future. There's so much going on looking to the future, because you talked about all the groundwork that has been done, all the relations that have been built, all the ministerial, bi-directional ministerial visits. It's coming to fruition, so many things on so many different levels, and you've chosen the two sides, Canada and Ireland, have chosen 2027 as an appropriate year to highlight so many things.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, it is a special year. We talked just a little bit ago about the 1847, that movement. It's very sad and tragic movement of so many refugees from Ireland in the famine times, and the way they were received from Canada. By Canada. So the idea that the Prime Minister and Taoiseach agreed was, look, this is an important year for both countries. 180 years later is 2027. So this gives us a chance. Okay, let's broadly three strands. Let's remember the past. Let's remember what happened in 1847. But more, and equally as important to that, is let's reflect on the intervening 180 years. So what's happened in these two countries? I talked about the idea of Stampede, Open Text, all these things that Irish Canadians have, so to their achievements and all of that, the political engagement. You look at Darcy McGee, who's the godfather of Confederation. You look at this beautiful Canadian flag designed by Irish Canadians. And throughout Canada, the experience in terms of music and culture and politics and business of the Irish. So it gives a chance to tell all those stories. And very importantly then, to look to the future together. Where are we going? And so the Canada Ireland 180, we announced the details for an open call for ideas in January. We were expecting, you know, we didn't know what to expect really, but based on previous type of things like this, maybe 100 or so expressions of interest of organisations, we've had 465 applications, just expressions of interest. So the response in Canada has been remarkable, right across the country, from coast to coast to coast. Every province, people are sending ideas, and we'd like to do this, we'd like to do that. So we've been working through those with a view to in the fourth quarter this year, towards the end of the year, we'll announce the program. And the program will have essentially a series of signature events. We're going to have music, we're going to have concerts, travelling people involved, we're going to work with the festivals, and we're going to have a very significant academic conference with the University of Toronto in the autumn of 27. The International Famine Commemoration will be in Canada, almost certainly, although it has yet to be determined where, but in Old Gros Isle would be some place that's been looked at now, of course, that whole story of Gros Isle. Mm-hmm. But that's so the International Famine Commemoration would be happening. And then we have a lot of interest in the screen and TV co-productions, musical, theatre. And we're looking, Riverdance will be announcing a major Canadian tour as well. So looking at the year of 27 in Canada, there'll be a huge amount of focus on the relationship. So that's really, really positive. And then it's all about, that's the now. It's we're talking about the now, the future, where to next. And so it's very exciting. Well, we've had some fabulous ideas sent in from people. Some people are focusing more on the history, and that's fine. Some mm-hmm. people focus more on the future, and that's mm-hmm. fine too. So mm-hmm. I think what we're trying to do is to make it as open for people, ultimately to celebrate the relationship between Ireland and Canada. And it's kind of, by design, a very positive and powerful concept in that context. We just didn't anticipate how well it was going to be received by people. I mean, it's just already taken life as well. So, for example, the Royal Conservatory of Music in Toronto, which covered the whole country, have announced their programme for next year already. And in it, they're going to have a Canada Ireland 180 concert, where they're bringing over Martin Hayes to mm-hmm. tell the story of the fiddle, the Cape Breton fiddle, the Irish fiddle. And that's just on their idea. Mm-hmm. So you have these, I know CBC Television are looking at some various projects. So you have all of these organizations who are responding in a way that's just very, very empowering and very inspiring. I think for Ireland and Canada, it's a great opportunity. We're looking to, as I mentioned, we'll be hosting Minister Miller in Ireland, and there'll be host series discussions around this. But the Prime Minister was very clear when he was there. He said this is a project they're going to do, and going to do very, very well. So we announced a fund of $2 million to start getting things moving. The Canadian government then, when the Prime Minister was in Ireland, announced a further $2 million. So there's momentum here, but that's over and above what organisations like the Royal Conservatory Music are doing anyway. So it's not about the money anyway, but it is about going to be a very special year for us.
That's on this side of the Atlantic. Yeah. Would you hope that there would be equal or at least as quite a lot of attention paid on the Irish side? Because, as you said, like the Irish diaspora are very aware of the Canada story because we live here.
Of course.
But can you see that there will be much happening in Ireland?
Well, I'm not as up to speed on what's happening in Ireland. I know, for example, there's a number of the festivals. I know the Galway Comedy Festival are talking to some of the comedy festivals here in Canada about maybe doing partnerships for Irish comedians going to there and Canadian comedians going to Ireland. I know the Galway Arts Festival will be seeing them on Tuesday week. They're looking at a whole Canada strand. So there is a lot of discussions. One of the things that will happen when Minister Miner travels with all of the various crown corporations that will come, they will meet their opposite counterparts and the idea of them coming up with shared concepts and ideas. So I'd hope there'd be a great portfolio of stuff in Ireland as well. But I think what's happened, we talked about the Davos speech, we talked about the change in geopolitics, but also the visit of Prime Minister Carney was wall-to-wall coverage in Ireland. So people are very proud of the Prime Minister in Ireland, very proud of the fact that he's Irish heritage, and the fact that his grandparents left Haggower just 100 years ago. And as we have the documentary evidence that the Halifax Museum gave us, arrived here with £5. Mm-hmm. That was the note on their file of possessions, mm-hmm. £5. Robert Carney arrived July 1925, and the little note says, possessions, £5. So they think that their grandson, just their grandson, not their great-grandson or great-great-great-grandson, just their grandson, has arrived back in Ireland as the Prime Minister of mm-hmm. Canada. It's a remarkable story about the promise and opportunity of Canada, that this is what this family of, very, I suppose, poor and looking to build a new life, and this is the life that they built, and now there's, and the consequence of that and the opportunity of Canada is that their grandson is the Prime Minister. So people were very proud of that, and I think it's partially because of Prime Minister Carney, but also because the other dynamics we've talked about, Canada's really in the spotlight right now. So we're getting a lot of interest. I mentioned the Ernst & Young Entrepreneur of the Year. The business community and the investment community, cultural community, in addition to the political community, are all beginning now to say, okay, what can we do? Can we do more work? Can we do more business with Canada? Can we make more connections? And it's been great. So it's been a real, you know, as Tom Peters once said, when the window of opportunity opens, don't close the curtains. It's been a remarkable time to be here, a very lucky time for us to be here. And we've been really had the privilege to get to know the Prime Minister a little bit before he became the Prime Minister, which was always great. So, but he's this super good person, and his family are amazing. And but, you know, it's against a backdrop of a country which has there's a lot of love for Ireland and Canada. And then that is matched by the amount of love for Canada and Ireland. And I know it hasn't been, maybe the Canada story hasn't been as well told in the past, but the truth is nearly every family, you know, has somebody in the family who's out living here or moved here. And I really respect and appreciate that now, is the scale of the immigration that's come here. And, you know, Canada has been great for the Irish. Mm-hmm. It's as simple as, I mean, people have come here, like yourself, Austin, mm-hmm. looking to, a lot of it is economic migrants are coming out, coming, people say, I want to start a better life, I want it for me and my family. And I have met so many people across Canada here in Ottawa, Toronto, Montreal, Alberta last weekend, Vancouver, who tell you their stories. And mm-hmm. say, you know, I came here and the 70s, I came here in the 60s, I came here in the 80s, or my grandparents came here, and they tell you what they did, and it's all this story of people coming with a sort of a frontier spirit. I'm gonna, because it's not easy to come to. I mean, you came in, was it the 80s you came here?
88,
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a big undertaking to move countries.
Our kids were 6 and 9, yeah. So we came as a family.
You come as a family. You're starting your businesses and all the things you did here, which was, and you had such great success with yourself and Mary and the whole family. But it's a big undertaking, and I think by and large the people we meet are very grateful for the opportunities they've had, and they've a lot of love for Canada, and people are very proud. And I notice at our events the Irish Canadians sing the Irish anthem, but they sing the Canadian anthem mm-hmm. with great passion too. Mm-hmm. And I was just talking to one of our colleagues inside, and she's born in Ireland, but she's lived here a lot of her life, and her kids are all Canadians. And she's like, I'm very proud Irish Canadian. Mm-hmm. I'm born in Ireland, but I live in Canada. And I think for us next year with the Canada Ireland 180, it's a chance for all these, for the Irish Canadians to really kind of take a step back and reflect and think, wow, you know what, we've made a big impact here.
Ambassador, I know you have a Canada Ireland pin on your lapel, and I'm surprised it's not Galway and lapel, but being very proud of your Galway. Our former president in Ireland was a good Galway man, and our current president is a good Galway woman.
Correct. And you know, it was an absolute privilege to be in Westport House 2 weeks ago with Prime Minister Carney, where we sat down and met with Catherine Connolly, our president, new president. She was fantastic. It was really inspiring to see her, to hear her talk, and the way she carried herself and represented the people of Ireland. She was wonderful. And, you know, the Prime Minister and the President got on very, very well. And they had a very interesting exchange of conversation about the two countries, essentially about the values of the two countries and the challenges in the world today. But you mentioned the previous President, President Higgins, who, again, an exceptional character. And he lives about a mile to the left of my house, one way in Galway, and President Connolly lives about a mile to the right of my house in Galway. So I have had the privilege to know both of them in their pre-presidential political careers, and both hugely committed to the community, to social justice, to the whole concept of our country and our people. So I think, you know, without a question of the doubt, President Higgins did a remarkable job, and I think President Connolly is off to a great, great start.
Not looking for a specific date, but I expect she'll be here during 2027.
Well, you know, we'd have to see what happens, but I think, you know, there's a good history of Irish presidents. So President McAleese came to Canada, President Robinson came to Canada. You know, we'll just see how things develop. But I know that President Connolly has family here in Canada, and she has a real affinity for Canada, and spoke to the Prime Minister about that and their shared views about that was clear. So we'll have to wait and see. Watch this space, Austin, that's what I'd say.
You mentioned how the immigration story of the Irish is that of those pioneers and frontiers. we are seeing a world at the moment which is very, there's a lot of anti-immigrant, and we're seeing it coming out of Ireland as much as other places. And it's very difficult to rationalise how the people who may be protesting immigration would have relatives who are immigrants in Canada, in Ireland, in in the US, Australia, England, who have left for economic reasons and have done well and have been able to see how that immigration story was enriching a country. And yet it's so sad and hurtful in ways to see how many Irish are, it's a minority except, but what we're seeing coming out of Ireland in the anti-immigration attitude.
Well, I think, look, I mean, it's very clear from an Irish point of view, there's about 7 million people live on the island of Ireland. There's about 70 million people in the world identify as Irish heritage. So there's 10 times more Irish heritage outside of Ireland than there is in Ireland. And the reason for that is that Irish people have emigrated for many years. We talked earlier about the famine, but Irish have been coming here for hundreds of years. We were at the event just last week with the mayor, where you were here, and you know, we talked. That was the Bytown bicentenary, and 80% of the residents in 1826 were Irish because they're specialist canal builders who built the Rideau Canal, and then they stayed on and so on. So we've been coming around the world, particularly this part of the world, for centuries. So I think Ireland is a country defined by immigration. St. Patrick's Day is the most celebrated national day in the world. We've, of course, celebrated here as well. And in Canada, it's not just a day, it's a month. I mean, it's, you know, we had our Ottawa parade in March, then first weekend, the second weekend was Toronto, third weekend was the parade in Montreal, and fourth weekend was the parade in Quebec. So, you know, wonderful. But so I think it is a country that's very proud of its diaspora. And the last event that you came to hear, Austin, was the Minister Richmond, our Minister of Diaspora, launched our diaspora strategy, which is very specifically saying we value our diaspora, we're going to engage with them. We're going to finance things, we're going to fund. So, for example, you know, right the way through to an organization you're involved in here, just for example, the Ottawa Seniors, fabulous group. It's not huge money, but we give money to help these things keep going. And we're working closely with the GAA across Canada, Rosa Tralee, which we're very close to as well. So there's so many different, so we're very keen on that. So I think any narrative that isn't positive about immigration or Irish immigrants or diaspora is one that doesn't really chime well with people. And I think it is worth noting, though, in the last election, the general election, you know, there was candidates of all political persuasions put themselves forward for the public, to electorate, the Irish people to choose to represent them, and including some of those who had very strong views on immigration. And unlike some countries in Europe where they have a large, what they would call, I suppose, right-wing, we didn't return any of those candidates. So that's important to note in the Dáil Éireann, which is the representative of the people, there isn't that representation. Having said that, there is, in the world of social media and all of that, there is definitely those narratives that are there. But I think, you know, when our representatives, when our Taoiseach and our ministers are, and others are out talking, I think we just need to continue. They are very clear that how important emigration has been to Ireland. But, you know, Ireland is a country that has transformed. I mean, if you look at when we became independent in 1922, Ireland was one of the poorest countries in the world. Agricultural based, very basic agriculture. Then went through a period of protectionism. So, you know, where we are now is, as I said, we're the fourth biggest European investor in Canada. We have all of this happening. We are the third biggest exporter of pharmaceuticals in the world. In Galway, there's 450 firms which collectively make 3/4 of the world's stents now. We, in terms of the investments that are happening in semiconductors, like the semiconductor industry here in Canada is huge. It's a $3 billion industry. But in Ireland, it's a $15 billion industry. So you look at those kind of high-end pharmaceuticals, medical devices, digital technologies, and now in the AI arena, example being the open text investment, that Ireland's doing remarkably well. But you know, it's changed a lot. One of the changes has been an increase in population. So about 30% of Irish people living in Ireland aren't born in Ireland. And if you look at, say, even take Dublin. So Dublin, all of the world's top 10 technology companies and many more are in Dublin. So you have the likes of, you know, Google, Amazon, Facebook, all LinkedIn, all these companies employing thousands and thousands of engineers and data scientists and all of that. but and some of them are recruited in Ireland, but they have to, of course, they need languages, they need more, so all people come from all around the world. So it's been a hugely positive thing for Ireland, in the sense of people coming forward. And let's not forget as well, the other dimension in recent times, with the terrible invasion of Russia into Ukraine, that one of our responses, because of our military neutrality, was to be very much on the humanitarian side. And I think at 1.2% of our population was displaced people from Ukraine. And right. When that started, first people, you know, similar to what happened in Montreal, people gave room in their homes, they gave over space, and then it became more structured. But it is something that we don't take lightly. We mm-hmm. take our responsibilities seriously. So I think the evidence doesn't really support a narrative of Ireland being anti-immigrant. Having said that, it is there and you hear it, but I think in the main, Ireland is a very welcoming country with very decent people, integrity people. I mean, at the end of the day, one of the things that I always find fascinating is we're the only unarmed police force in the Western world now. So the Gardaí Síochána don't carry guns. Mm-hmm. They carry, a notebook it's because Gardaí Síochána, it's a community policing mm-hmm. model. So mm-hmm. the community is policing itself, really, and the guard is there to of course enable that. But it is. I suppose that's an example of why the country is a little bit different than others. And you know, then you have other these interesting statistics like radio. So radio, we have the highest listenership per capita of radio in the world, and then also we have the highest readership of newspapers per capita in the world. So we read more newspapers, we listen to the radio. And so people like to discuss things, like to keep up to speed with current affairs and the world of sports and politics and business. So people are informed, and we have very good participation in our elections. So I think that idea of Ireland being anti-immigrant isn't one that really stacks up, but it is there, I'd say that nonetheless.
So, Ambassador, the European presidency, a pivotal time, very influential time, and I know that the Taoiseach met with the President of the European Parliament, European Union, and agreed on what agenda Ireland is hoping to achieve over the next 6 months.
Yeah, no, thank you, Austin, for that question. It's an absolutely critical moment for Ireland, Canada, Europe at the moment. So Ireland has just taken the presidency of the European Union, 1st of July through to the 31st of December. What that means in practice is that we will host about 250 official meetings in Ireland. All the ministers, Minister of Finance, Minister of Foreign Affairs and so on, will chair the meetings between all their other colleagues and move the files on. One of the most important files that we've inherited that we need to really make progress on and close is the budget for Europe. So we lead the negotiations on the European budget. So it's a really important time for Ireland. It's the eighth time we've had the presidency, and it puts us in the spotlight. It puts a real spotlight on Ireland. And we're considered to be a very good country on the presidency. We have a good track record. There's three overarching areas we're going to focus in on our discussions. Firstly is all around competitiveness. How can we make Europe more competitive, reduce any barriers between countries, focus on innovation, in particular on digital. Secondly is about security, that the whole question on secure European security, collaborating together, but specifically on Ukraine, and a major, major focus on supporting Ukraine and the illegal invasion from Russia. And then thirdly is about values, is we have a set of shared values in Europe. You know, it's a very complex cornucopia of cultures and languages and people and 27 different countries working as one. But it's based on shared values, values we share with Canada too, and we're going to defend those values and defend the more vulnerable people. So we have the saying on it for our European presidency is Niniart Ecur Lekela, which means there's no strength without unity. And that's our point, is look, let's come together, be strong, be work together. And so the presidency will also, our presidency will also coincide with the European Union and Canada summit, which is on later in the autumn time, and we're seeing significant moves from the Prime Minister Carney's administration to become closer aligned with Europe, which we think is very, very welcome. And of course, particularly as we're saying, Ireland is the gateway to Europe for so many Canadian firms now. And you know, even looking at the air travel between Ireland and Canada, there's 46,500 seats a week between the two countries. We now have services from Halifax, from St. John's, from Calgary, from Toronto, of course, from Montreal. Daily services. So the connectivity drives a lot of things. But the European Union presidency is the most important thing for the government right now, and it's gone off to a fantastic start. And we're going to the Taoiseach told the Prime Minister he wants our presidency to be very pro-Canada. So what that one of the things that means is a large number of Canadian ministers are going to come to the ministerial meetings, which is really welcome. And so I know when the Taoiseach and Prime Minister came together in June in Dublin, they talked about how they can work together more. So that's really good.
Ambassador, there's a perception out there, or I hear it, that you know when you get to various levels of government, the accusation is made by the man on the street, first of all, that the farther up the political ladder you would get, the farther removed the politicians are from reality. And there's often an accusation that Brussels is so far removed from reality, it is in introducing legislation that is totally impractical for be it the farmer or the working man.
Yeah, well, I think look, if you look at our political leaders in Ireland, they're so accessible. I mean, almost every politician has a clinic that they're open on a Saturday or at the weekend. They're extremely accessible in the Dáil, in the media, and we've had the privilege of hosting a whole number of them here in the residence, as you know, Austin, over the last two years. But what is clear, all of the politicians, extremely high integrity, decent people who represent us with great distinction, and I think we're lucky with that. But on the accusation of Europe, and I think I can see where you come from, is it distant, is it a little bit removed? European Union is the most successful peace process of all time, and so what's happened is, you know, people who are in conflict together, and we have to not too long ago came together and said, okay, we're going to work together. We're going to have one unit, one market. It's now the largest, most profitable market in the world, 450 million consumers, which is why it's so important for it to have Canadian companies have a base in Europe, ideally in Ireland. But it has been very successful. It has been the single biggest transformation driver of the Irish economy, the Irish country. So I think, while it may seem distant, it's hugely relevant and it's hugely successful. And it's challenging at the moment, particularly on the Ukraine side of the House, which we mentioned already. But there's a lot of opportunity, and I think within the Irish presidency of the Council of Europe, it's something for an opportunity for us to shape the agenda for ourselves and for the next generation as well.
Ambassador, I think probably 2028 will be when your term is up, is it?
Correct. So September of this year we'll be 2 years in, and then we've 2 years more to go.
So like after 2027, what are you going to do with yourself?
Canada in 27. Well, look, there's loads to be done.
I know.
You know, if you look at what the Taoiseach and Prime Minister agreed, which is this 8 areas of collaboration, which really is going to be a step change in the relationship, because we're talking about, you know, really increasing our trading engagement, increasing our research and innovation with the universities, collaborating more on the international foreign policy side, as is going to happen in a few weeks' time, the culture visit. You know, so it's just a hugely positive, empowering time for the Canada-Ireland relationship. So I think, you know, after I'm moved on and my successor comes, I hope, as everyone always just wants to leave things better than when you got them. Yeah. These jobs, by definition, is you make your contribution and then someone else comes and makes their contribution. It's a deep, deep honour and privilege to be doing these jobs. I don't take it for granted for a second. And so if we can leave with a little more enhanced than we start here, I think particularly just that moment we talked about at the start, that political dynamic and the rupture, as the Prime Minister calls it, has created opportunities for Ireland. Mm-hmm. And we are not we're not holding back. This is the time. Now is the time. But the music's on. We're on the dance floor. We're moving. And the response has been just incredible for all across Canada when we go and engage particularly the political and business and cultural space. It's been just remarkable.
Perfect spot to wrap up. Thanks. Thank you so much, Ambassador.
Brilliant. Thanks very much, Austin. Congratulations on the show.